Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Living on Blockchain. Today we are speaking to Raghu Mohan. He's the OG himself of the Web3 space, even though he is a little uncomfortable with that nickname that I have sort of given him. But honestly, he's probably one of the most understated, humble, real builders in the Web3 space. He's been there from the start and he's seen so many startups from the ideation to, you know, scaling journey. I have immense amount of respect for him and I was just very happy at the prospect of being able to interview him. I do believe that this was a very, very insightful conversation and a lot for everybody to take in from. So let's go ahead and deep dive right in.
Hi, Raghu. Thank you so much for taking all the time to speak to us. How are you doing today?
Doing good and thanks for having me. I don't know what I've done to be on podcasts and things like that, but always a pleasure speaking to you.
You're just always like selling yourself short. You're so humble and that is sort of a little bit of a rare breed in this space, but you're one of the, like, you know, you movers and shakers of this space. You're doing so much, but we'll get into that in a bit. But first, let's, like, you know, let's start with a bit of an intro as to how you got into Web3. Tell us a little about that.
I got into Web3 by accident. That is probably the best way of defining this, this whole journey for me. But I think this was back in 2016. I just finished my stint with a tech company called Udacity. It was a dream company. I was a part of Sebastian Thrun's first CS101 that he did from Stanford. And I said, if he ever is hiring in India, I'll go work for him. And he was, and I went and worked. And it was a lot of fun. I was their first hire and learned a lot about scaling a new market for a Silicon Valley, you know, unicorn back then. You know, it was 5x their paid user count here. And I think at that time, you know, as it is with most jobs, you know, spend enough time in a job and get to a seniority, every job becomes a sales job. So that's
basically, that's true.
That's basically what happened with me. And I wanted to kind of, you know, figure out what I really wanted to do. I had spent most of my time before that with startups. So I knew that at some point I will, you know, do something along those lines. And this was when I was like, okay, let me ply my trade of being a growth marketer and a content strategist and, you know, that sort of, those sort of roles in for consulting with other startups who probably need that right now. So I started consulting with a few dev houses, a few communities, a few early stage startups, and someone came along and said, hey, can you write white papers? I was like, sure, I can write white papers. And then they asked me, do you know what an ICO is? I was like, do you know what an ICO is? And I was like, yeah, I know what an ICO is. And that kind of got me into it. And, you know, six white papers later, I was completely red-pilled into this entire space. I was clued in with most things that was happening at that time. And one thing, you know, really kind of stood out, which was the lack of developers and engineers in this space. I always looked at Web3, crypto back in the old days, as it was called, you know, as an engineering movement. And this entire potential, you know, multi-trillion dollar market was held together by a shoestring of engineers. And that I thought was a big enough problem to solve. And, you know, I had done a lot of good work in the developer side of things during a previous stint with a company called HackerUp, and where I scaled their developer community from like 3,000 developers back then to about 900,000 developers by the time I left. Today, the platform has 6 million developers on it. So I'm very proud of the time that I spent there. It also taught me how to evangelize new stuff to devs. And India had all the devs that you can ever want, right? So that's what I started with, kind of ended up being this thing called Lumos Labs. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got into it. And I think the main intention kind of bungling along the way while writing those white papers was, I think the conversation for Web3 should kind of move from profits and trading to wealth and job creation, which I thought was something that could do my country a lot of good. And that's what I do for a living now.
Yeah, this is awesome. You know, you totally sold yourself short and very humble in the beginning. But, you know, you've been associated with such big brands, Udacity and then HackerUp. So, you know, I think they did community before community was a thing, right? Like, even though it was not Web3 or crypto, as you said, but they've been fantabulous, absolutely. So, you know, what was like the first white paper that you actually wrote? Because you mentioned that, you know, six, seven papers down and you were completely in the game.
Not very proud of it, but I wrote the new Face Vision white paper. But that was a lot of fun. But I really thought that the concept was great, right? Like an incentivized ad network for brick and mortar retail. It made a lot of sense from a crypto use case standpoint, but then what you write in white papers and what gets computed in the real world are two very different things, you know. So
two different things. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. It's very interesting. No, but I do agree with you. It's a very use case, you know, very understandably good use case for, especially for crypto, you know, the incentivizing ad networks. So no, I do understand and I agree with you here, where, you know, what gets written in white papers and what gets executed are like two different realities altogether. You know, you tend to, like, listen to, we've been on so many panels together, etc. And I listen to you talking, you know, you talk with a lot of fervor when it comes to building for the country, right? And nowadays, there are a lot of people who are moving out of the country because of the policy that has kind of come in. Do you have a take on that?
You put me on the spot, Ritaksha. Think about this kind
of but this is like the very obvious question. It's right there. Like, you know, even I'm actually on your side. I do feel that the other places that people are kind of, you know, moving to, they are very, I don't know, they're very transactional, you know, and there is something special about building while, and you know, while you're sitting in your home country and you're building for a global audience. But I do know that, you know, you would have some thoughts here. So do, you know, do chip in.
Sure. Let me put this in the most nuanced way possible. Right? So you, some background would help here. I've come from a defense family. My father is still serving in the Air Force as an air marshal. And, you know, a lot of the whole patriotism beyond patriotism for the land is something that I've kind of always seen as a kid. And I'm very proud of where I'm from. I also know the potential of the country when it comes to innovating. I was also one of the very early team members at Your Story. I was like their second full-time editor. And there were times where, like, there would be days where my stories used to go out because we didn't have enough writers back then. And I'll never forget some of the things that I've seen, right? Like Sachin and Bini Bansal from, you know, Flipkart standing outside Higginbotham's in Bangalore, handing out pamphlets to people saying, hey, go buy the same book on Flipkart. Bhavesh Agarwal coming to our office and installing the Ola app on our phones. You know, those type of stories I thought was very inspiring. I feel like we as a country have a massive chip on our shoulder. There's so much that we prove, and we have all the talent in the world to do it. And I think, like, at startups, in my day job right now is evaluating, you know, startups to kind of take into Builder Strike, which I can touch upon later. And the one thing that I'm always looking for is what's the chip on this founder's shoulder, because this will make them kind of, you know, go through worse. And India as a country has got a lot of it. Crypto and Web3 seems to be a chip on the shoulder kind of movement for a lot of the people who are tired with how the Web2 world essentially works. And it seems like a great marriage for our founder ethos that is prevalent in India, and also the, you know, the fact that Web3 itself kind of resonates with that same mindset. It just feels like such a great opportunity for India to kind of take pole position. And we're already seeing that if the most used network outside of Ethereum is an Indian built project, that should give you a sense of the kind of head start that we have in this space. And I really want India to win in this. Now, when it comes to moving abroad, you know, it's mainly kind of coming from regulatory uncertainty. You know, I actually am pretty pro regulations, because at least then I'll know what I can't do. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. That is what I feel as well. Yeah. At least then, you know, you wouldn't be like all of a sudden, like with ethics, at least that was my perception. What had happened was, like, overnight we were out of business, right? So when that RBI order had come in, like, we couldn't serve our customers and users anymore. And that is like the worst case scenario. At least if the policy is there, you know what you can do and what is beyond that effort. So you kind of think ahead.
Correct. And I wish it comes sooner, right? Like, at least, and most of my friends who have moved out, they're very clear about the fact that the second we know that there's clarity on regulations, we'll comply and come back. It's just, you know, the hassle of living in the unknown, something that scares a lot of founders. And I empathize with that. But again, like, it's, we can't miss out on this. Not again, right? Like, we missed out on the on the tech wave, we did back office for that. We missed out on the hardware wave. We almost missed out on computers before that. Yeah. And, you know, here we've actually got a start, and I really think that we can't let this go down. But again, it all comes from the fact that I'm stupidly patriotic and I want to do something about it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good to be patriotic. Even I feel very strongly about this. I feel like we are from India and we should be building here and we should be adding, reserves here rather than sort of moving abroad. And obviously that causes like immense brain drain in various ways because it's like a ripple effect, right? It's not just a founder that's going to be moving out. It's like an entire, horde of people who will be moving out, who will be following the founder. So we don't necessarily want that at all. But having said that and keeping that aside, now with this kind of prohibitive sort of taxation that has come into place, and yesterday, I think I was reading in the news that our finance minister kind of made a comment about how, crypto is primarily, the fear is that it will be primarily used for terrorist funding and for money laundering. Don't you think that the environment is becoming increasingly restrictive for like the founders to continue business here or for Indian users to be dabbling in crypto?
Looks like it. I have a lot of empathy for the regulator as well. It's not the regulator's job to kind of stay at pace with technology. And this is expecting them to do so generally will result in half-baked regulations as well. So I think they should take time. But also, I think they're letting the media off pretty easy here. The sensationalism around anything crypto in India is so big. It does more harm than good. With respect to the taxations, I honestly don't have thoughts because personally it doesn't affect me. I don't, trade or I don't invest in crypto in that sense, right? And whatever the taxes are, I'm happy paying it. It pays my dad at that level. So I'm okay with contributing. I can see how this affects us in the short term. And all I can ask for is clarity. Once there's clarity, we work with it.
Yeah, that's a good take to have. I think that is the kind of policy that, I have taken as well. That, as long as there is clarity, that's a good thing. And then, you kind of are on the side of caution and you make sure that you're complying, being compliant everywhere. And then you can serve your end user better as well, right? There is not that instability kind of goes away from the user's mind as well.
That's true. Yeah, again, the conversation is all about crypto being an asset and things like that. It's such a powerful technology and the kind of cool stuff that people are building with it that I see every day, which is insanely useful. I'll give you an example, right? Like this decentralized video communications tool. If you hear the founder's story as to why they're doing it in a peer-to-peer manner, they'll tell you because their cousin sits in a tier two village, internet broadband connections are not that great and centralized solutions like Zoom basically have a longer ping rate because their data centers are sitting somewhere far away. If the same thing was peer-to-peer, network topology is shorter and I would be able to have the same kind of call quality that I'm having on broadband, but at lower bandwidths. So his cousin, who's living in like a tier two city, can consume online content and learn better, even though they don't have access to best facilities. So I think that's inspiring as hell. And this is the sort of stuff that should be spoken about more. And I'm not denying that wrongdoing doesn't happen in crypto. It's there. Yeah. Any gray area attacks the worst people also. And point is that, we should stop that, but at the same time, not at the cost of all of these cool things that are being built. And, really encourage that, more of that building side of things that, perhaps is not being spoken about at all.
That is what is kind of missing in this entire startup story. Like, people kind of tend to focus so much about the funding aspect and the big numbers and the IPL ads and the, the flamboyancy is kind of associated with Web3 and crypto. But people aren't really talking about why is this product or platform being built and what is like the story behind it. I feel that is completely or at least missing to quite an extent from the conversation, the discourse that we have.
I feel it's too non-controversial. Like it doesn't get you enough page views. And trust me, as a former journalist, I know this. this country is real. But I think there is a great disservice being done every time we speak about the next big sensational scam that happens and forget the thousands of great things that are happening in the space, which is good for, you know, the community, good for the country. And I hope that changes. It is changing a lot. It's not 2017 reporting was bad, but now it's a
very bad. Yeah.
Now it's getting a little better.
Yes, I'm glad. So now, you know, now talking about better things, what are the kind of projects or platforms that you're really excited about currently? Like, you know, have you come across thousands of pitches on a weekly basis? So to tell me a few of them that, you know, really got you excited.
Thousands of pitches weekly, I don't see that. Those are polygon numbers.
But with,
you know,
you'll get there then, aspiring number, we'll get there. But maybe you're hundreds. At least you do. You guys are incubating and you are helping so many projects, and everybody seems to know about you guys and is connected in some way or the other. But there must be some projects that must have caught your eye. They are doing something exceptionally different.
Yeah, so I have to be a little diplomatic here. I love all the projects that I'm working with right now. But my personal thesis for projects that I like to be involved in are around infrastructure and community. I think infrastructure projects are a no-brainer in the sense that anything that provides dApp infrastructure that allows it to scale a lot to internet demand, that I think is generally pretty powerful. I've had the pleasure of working with people like Biconomy, you know, people like Covalent, and, you know, these are kind of projects that I really think are fundamentally needed for the space if, you know, products and economies are to be built on top of them. And I think I understand that space a little bit as well, you know, because of, you know, the past work that I've done. I really think that community organization by aligning incentives is also really, really good. Part of the endeavor at Builders Tribe is also something that we want to be able to build this community of mentors and investors for, you know, Web3 startups. And how do we align incentives within that so organization and delivery, it becomes more efficient in that sense. So these two areas are super interesting for me, and, you know, projects along these come, you can't just build an infrastructure project out of, you know, by launching a token. You really need to kind of understand, right, you know, the base level workings of, you know, layer ones, layer twos, protocol layers on top of them, to be able to, you know, launch such a project on which others can build. So I think we're still early there, and I'm seeing a lot of good projects coming from that side. Decentralized file storage, for example, like, it's incrementally underrated. And today, the cheapest file storage and compute you can buy are from decentralized options, and not enough people thinking about it. And and on the other hand, on the community side of things, I think we're seeing elements of that with gaming guilds, but and you know, some DAOs. But again, these, I think we're like really early and it feels like a hype cycle at this point for the most part. But first principle thinking in these projects, there are a few that I get to meet every week, and couldn't be more excited for them.
Yeah. You know, what you said about file storage, I think there is a, you know, there is a wrong, you know, kind of concept that is there in people's head that, you know, when you kind of store anything on blockchain, it becomes very costly. And then there are these, you know, wonderful storage apps and platforms that are being built in a decentralized way that are actually, as you said, they're cheaper. But this is something that is, I think, maybe because of the Ethereum gas fee aspect, I don't know how did this kind of got built up. I think last weekend, or I think I was speaking at this college fest, which was for VIIT, I think. And then they were also kind of, you know, talking about how storage, the co-panelist was sort of not sure about how, you know, how this can be cheaper. And how he kind of had this opinion that, you know, it would cost a lot if you are kind of storing. Obviously, images would, you know, cost a lot. But his entire notion was that anything being stored on blockchain would, you know, be far more costly. So that this is something that is, I think, it's a concept which is just sort of gotten embedded in people's head, which might not be completely correct.
I mean, it is not completely correct. Like, decentralized file storage and storing on an L1 are two different things. And that difference you have to go and like explain to people, but we should urge them to.
That is exactly what I was trying to do. That, but like on that particular event, also I was trying to explain to them that, okay, no, it's like it's different when you're storing it on Ethereum, and it's different when you're looking at other L2 solutions. and it would be one of the cheaper options that you have. But I think that it's, we are just so still so early. You know, people look at Ethereum as their go-to for everything. And now there are so many wonderful, you know, layer two solutions as well. And now people are also building like layer zero solutions. Do you have like an opinion on that?
About how early this space is, or on
both? Let's take up both. Take up both.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's quite early, right? Like most of the times I've had the benefit of spending some time in this space. It's very important to kind of go and reread the whole constructs at the base layer, right? Like consensus, distributed versus decentralized. All of these things, it's good to reinforce it in your mind, because I come from a Web2 world myself. And I think anyone who's not a 17, 18 year old is natively Web2. And the true native Web3 guys are the people who are experiencing the internet in this way for the first time. Right. I don't blame them. And being able to sit down and read these things, spend time with them, and kind of unlearn a lot of the things, the way it was done back in the days is going to be crucial before these nuances become sorted out, right? And as far as new innovations in, you know, file storage specifically, or distributed compute specifically, I think we are still very, very early. I'm super excited about, you know, players like Akash scaling the network layer itself, and you know, relay chain ecosystems like Cosmos and Polkadot, again, are super exciting. Yeah. There's a really different take on how decentralized ecosystems can be built with, rather than being multi-chain, there's this cross-chain conversation that's going on, which is all connected by this one relay chain. That I think is, it intuitively feels like it may work out better, given the amount of security risks that are there with this whole bridges that people are building between chains right now. Not to mention, you know, their efficiencies as well. Again, like I think it all boils down, you know, for the sake of keeping this conversation rather from going too technical, I think it's still really, really free. And I feel the markets have given us a way to do these fun experiments and kind of fail upwards while we figure out what really works. Very bullish about, generally quite interested in the D-Web, and, you know, have the fortune of working with a few companies in this space. So I'm quite excited to see what happens.
You know, I love how bullish you are on the infrastructure aspect, because obviously that is like the foundational aspect, and people at times kind of glaze over it because, you know, it gets too technical. But I love what you said, that, you know, fail upwards and figure out, basically, because we are still in the iteration phase, like as an entire sector, right? We're just sort of figuring out, and everybody's tinkering, trying to see what really works.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, never a better time to enter the space. Strongly urge everyone listening to this to give this a shot.
Absolutely. No, I feel like a cult leader on most days, that I'm always asking people to join Web3 and, you know, at least give it a shot. Like it's some new exciting cult, but it can be really exciting. You know, there's another exciting thing that you sort of, insightful thing that you kind of pointed out. And this is something that I have been saying a lot, that, you know, people who are coming in from Web2 and into Web3, you know, there is no problem that they would as such face. The only problem that, you know, they will face are also people who are originally in Web3, that, you know, they have to unlearn a lot of things. There's so much happening every day. You have to unlearn so many, you know, ideas that you might have held, and, you know, there are better ways to do things. I think that is going to be the key difference. So the people who are going to make it in Web3, what do you think?
I mean, isn't that true for any new technology, right? And I still remember when I joined your story, the reason why you'd join a startup is because you didn't get placed from college. Today, it's such an acceptable thing to do. And, you know, the people who unlearned what it was to going to a job and spending the next 35 years doing the same thing versus building something that is insanely useful and owning a part of it to create wealth.
Yeah.
You know, that was an unlearning that the early entrepreneurs from India had to do and show that it could be done. And it then becomes a norm. And your early winners are always the people who are open-minded enough about change, and kind of having that why not mentality, as opposed to, you know, having everything seems to be working fine. Why does this need to change? Right. And I think this is true for Web2 guys. And quite honestly, it's a lot harder to do here, because even today, Web2 solutions are more scalable relatively.
That's true.
And more efficient. than Web3 solutions. And I can give you a developer's perspective, right? Because if I had taken up a job in, and especially this was back in the day when Hyperledger Fabric and Quorum and all of those private chains were a big deal, right? I spoke to a developer who'd been working on these chains for some time, and he told me that, look, man, if I had spent the same time in a Web2 company, at least I would have worked on something at scale, at something in production. I've spent the last 3 years just doing POCs, right? And that isn't taking me anywhere. And I think that it's that unlearning and that being open-minded enough in Web3 is a lot harder to do, given how advanced Web2 still is in most contexts of company building, of product building, right? And it is going to be hard. But the people who have accepted that, hey, this could be a new way of doing something a little more efficiently, it's going to be a lot harder. And I'm going to have to unlearn a lot of the things that I grew up thinking were the norm. Those are the people who I seem to have a better chance at, building something of significance here. And it's always been true. I've seen three waves, right? Like mobility was the first one that I saw where everyone was kind of migrating from desktop web apps to mobile apps. Then cloud became like a really big conversation, as opposed to kind of housing all your data in a server farm which you owned inside your office. And then third bit is this Web2 to Web3 side of kind of things. And I think the guys who made it in the early days were the people who kind of came in and had a why not and let me see how I can learn this ground up that much. It's hard to do, but I think that's a fundamental prerequisite to build anything of significance in this space.
You know, this is like, this can only come from somebody who's seen these multiple waves, like your perspective. As I said, you know, in the beginning, that you know, you're kind of one of the OGs and you're selling yourself short here because you've seen the way Web2 has, you know, kind of scales. And now you know you're coming from that perspective that, okay, in Web3, it's a lot harder. And this is a new perspective for me as well because, you know, when I hear you saying it, I'm in complete agreement with you, but I never really thought of this myself, that because in Web3, everything is so early, like people are still iterating and figuring out what kind of does work or at least even fits, you know, Web2 people have a better chance of unlearning and sort of, you know, growing because that is the scale at which it is at.
Correct.
It's such a wonderful perspective. Like I never really thought of it like that way. You know, I keep thinking about it that, okay, I'm running into a wall while scaling because things are different. But I never thought about how, you know, it might be easier for the Web2 guys to actually unlearn and, you know, sort of scale. So, yeah, that's a very interesting perspective to have.
Yeah, I'm very uncomfortable with that whole OG thing that, you know, people say. I don't know what
you've done so much. Experience matters. You've done so much. And, you know, you know what you're talking about. And that is what I'm saying, that there is so much hot air in this space, especially. That, you know, there are a lot of people who kind of, there are a lot of builders, but there is a lot of hot air as well. And, you know, you are somebody who's actually seen and scaled in Web2 as well as now you're in Web3 and you're such a facilitator here. So I don't understand, like, why would you not be okay with the title of being the OG? You are. Helped us.
Not really. Until I've contributed something fundamental in this space, I don't think anyone is an OG. And with that mindset, I think there are only like a handful of us who are, who can call themselves that. And also like, OG is like original gangster, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
context that has.
That is what I know as well. But you are the original gangster of Web3. you were early. Yeah. So, you know, you started off earlier than most. So, obviously, I would still perceive you like that. And, you know, if it's okay, if it makes you uncomfortable, go into it. Like a few years down the line, and then you'll be like, you know, Tarusha was right. I was
if I ever feel like that, I'll call you and tell you that.
Yeah, but, you know, you are too, like, humble that way. But, okay, now, but tell me about Builders, right? Because, you know, that it's such a wonderful, you know, community that you guys have built, you and Parin. And, you know, we've kind of talked about it when he was here on the podcast as well, that you guys were actually sort of evaluating your first cohort at that point. And, so it's been quite a journey. And now I think you guys are doing something in the metaverse as well, correct?
Yeah, well, not Builders, right? But, yes, I can touch upon both both projects here. So Lumos was the project that kind of worked on the developer side of things, and I actually moved away from Lumos because my heart was primarily with startups. And we tried doing the whole builder stripe thing within Lumos back in the day. And hey, look, when you're taking money from a chain, you are kind of subservient to the mandate that you onboarded. And you can't really bat for the fund there. So that's something that I learned the hard way. And that was one of the reasons why we started builder stripe separately with Pareet. Lumos is still works on the developer side of things, and Kavya runs it, who was my co-founder there, and she's probably a much better leader for that company than I was. And you know, so her view, her vision for the developer ecosystem is this large metaverse that kind of facilitates almost real-time conversations with people who are custodians of new technology and people who want to adopt it. And I really think that. I'm very excited for what's to happen there, and you know, I support it in an advisory capacity right now. Builder Stripe was our take on what would an incubator look if it was decentralized, right? And we spent a lot of time kind of doing this, and I have some experience of having done accelerators for Web3 specifically. I, you know, it's very clear for me that a serious Web3 founder does not have the time for a cohort like sit down and you know, learn things for 3 months and then figure out what happens next, right? The second big thing that we learned is, you know, the space changes almost every week, every month, and there's a new paradigm there, and there's no way in which a centralized set of people can have the network or be or consume the knowledge to be able to meaningfully support people working on the frontier. So in the whole Web3 way, what we did was we put together a large community of people who have done this 0-1 journey before, which is an entrepreneur, a founder, an early employee, which is an early investor who's seen this journey kind of pan out across multiple companies, and some funds who are sitting on a lot of collective intelligence on, you know, the bets that they took on spaces and how it actually transpired. With this, what we have now is a large community of people whose incentives are already aligned to help a startup. What Builder Stripe does is we evaluate startups, and we've been blessed with good deal flow because of that, you know, just actually because both Pareen and I are little are slowly turning into dinosaurs into this space because we don't get the plays that come to us. And, you know, we know we've been around, so we know the channels where these startups are. So we get a lot of access to them, and then, you know, we filter them on a very first principles founder-driven basis, which is that does the founder have conviction about the play? Does the play itself need to be decentralized? And is this the right person to do the job? And based on these very fundamental filtering, we then expose this tribe to these startups that we have filtered. While doing this, there is a service fee that we collect in the form of network allocation. And most of it is redistributed back to the tribe based on the founder's consent. And the key members in the tribe can help the startup. So that way, you're already kind of invested in the success of the startup. And your mentorship and your investment is definitely going to be more thought out than what it would be if we were controlling the entire operations. And so far, I think we've spoken to about 650 startups, 650 projects over the last 7 months or so. And 14 of them are working with us, right? We're pretty selective about who we work with. And six of them have gone on, are very close to going public as networks right now. And it seems to be working at some level. Now the point is to be able to scale it without the operating team being involved. And that's what, you know, most of
that is like the challenge for any scaling company. Like that is exactly where I think we are as well. Like, you know, how do you sort of scale this without the core team being involved in everything?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Web3 way, you know, the community owns and runs the organization as opposed to people. And this gives it equitable redistribution of wealth. And at the same time, insane scaling capabilities, because your limit is how big the network can get. And if you can solve for coordination between this, then you've built a new paradigm. And that's what I'm very excited about I mean, that's what gets me out of bed to, you know, sit in the slog the way we do right now.
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous problem to solve. As you said, it'll create a whole new paradigm, right, for your particular platform or for others to learn from it as well. So, okay, you know, now moving on to, you know, some trends as such in the space now, you know, NFTs have kind of have so many use case scenarios. Do you have like a take of now, any kind of a favorite NFT project that you've seen of late?
Look, I think fundamentally, I look at NFT as gating and access mechanism. More than the fact that it's, I think a very good friend of mine from Ishita from Woodstock Fund, right? Like she says that it's actually more important that it's non-fungible than the fact that it's a token. And that really stuck with me for a really long time. What do I want to make non-fungible? And my identity, my characteristics, my capabilities, my talents, if I could organize like-minded people based on, if I could make that non-fungible, then I can organize a lot of people with the same characteristics or at least the same beliefs. And I think the best NFT projects are the ones that have caught on to this. You know, sure, the speculation drives a bit of short-term growth in the volumes and things like that. But best NFT projects that I've seen, I mean, like for example, I've been lucky enough to know a few Bored Ape owners. And I asked them, like, this is worth so much money. Would you ever want to sell it? They told me, and you know, they're pragmatic about it. They tell me, look, I hope the day doesn't come that I have to, because the value that I get out of being a part of this community, because I'm a Bored Ape owner, is more than the dollar value that is associated with owning a Bored Ape itself. And that to me is the hallmark of a great NFT project. The use cases of NFTs kind of being put into, you know, general dApps is pretty insane, right? Like, I don't know if you guys have checked out DeveloperDAO. I absolutely love how, you know, segmented developers and denoted that using NFTs. And I think that's a brilliant use case. Now, what I've created is a very accurate segmentation of a developer audience that I got. And this is a problem that we had in the Web2 world. Not every great academic coder is a great product guy and vice versa. Right. And how do I identify these people when I target them using top of the line method? The NFT is a great answer to do that. DeveloperDAO does a phenomenal job of doing it. There are DAYC, for example. It sounds like a cliche right now.
Right.
I like it for the fact that they've been able to create this high power community that identifies themselves more than what the society labels them for. And I think this is one part that most of the people don't get it. Even I didn't get it until I met people who, you know, held on to their Bored Apes forever too. And you know, that really kind of gave an entire new perspective for me. And anything that I want to be untamperable with and easily, you know, transferable, in, make it easily transferable, right from certificates, invoices, and those sort of stuff. I think those more mainstream use cases will come up over time. But, you know, as of now, a pure play NFT project, I'm looking at what is it gating and what is it organizing. And if that community has inherent value, then the NFT for me also is something that is worth holding on.
Right. It's all about the community after all. I think, you know, community is becoming, it was always supposed to be big, but I think now that, you know, we are at a place in our journey where we really realize that this is what is really moving things along. You know, people used to think on a macro level that, okay, it's the influencers or the ways that are moving the market. But ultimately, if you have community on your side, you can yourself be in that position, correct?
Yeah, that's true. It is the power of the crowd over the power of the few, right?
Right.
Web3 movement.
Yeah.
And a good articulation of that power of the crowd is community that come together on certain beliefs and certain capabilities.
Absolutely. Okay, so now, you know, we are kind of at the, we're running out of time, but I would like to ask you, there are people who are, you know, looking to sort of get in this space, right? And, you know, they are maybe moving, making the transition from Web2 to Web3. What would be the kind of resources that you would point them towards or people?
Let me, it depends on what they want to do, right? And what their core skill sets are. If it is on startups and if you want to kind of start something new in this space, actually, even before that, right? Fundamentally, read the Bitcoin white paper. I think it's a beautiful piece of math that is worth putting the time and effort in trying to understand it. Like that perhaps teaches the ethos of decentralization. And I wish I had done that a lot earlier than when I actually got around to doing it, because a lot more things make sense now. And then if you want to be able to build a comfortable layer on this immutable network that has been built, read the Ethereum yellow paper. And if you have the stomach for it, please read the entire white paper. Because especially if you're a builder and if you want to build
things. It's a little technical.
These two resources, I think, really provide great foundations to what this world actually looks like. Post that, I think, you know, A16Z Startup School is a good way to understand how ventures are built on top of in the Web3 world. I think at least gives you a good framework. But apart from that, a lot of the information is quite fragmented. There's no one-stop shop which I can just go and learn. There's no textbook for this. And based on this fundamental knowledge, based on some, you know, peripheral stuff like the A16Z Startup School things, then post that, I can, you know, I would say, you know, enter the wild, wild west of Twitter and try to beat out the noise and follow the founders of these, of some of the projects that you think are that you really like. I think especially if they're a little more active on Twitter, you know, you can learn a lot passively based on what they're tweeting and the resources that they tweet. And also, you know, strangely, Web3 is like just so accessible. Writing to them more often than not gives you a response. And, you know, you could just get on a call with them and try and get your questions answered. I'd also say work in a Web3, you know, first organization to understand what it is like before, if you have intentions of starting up. I just generally think that that sets expectations of what you want to do and what you shouldn't be doing very well before you start your own. So if you're making that jump, learn the fundamentals first, which is Bitcoin and Ethereum, and then, you know, try to check out some of the organized, you know, content streams, especially with A16Z Crypto School, and then, you know, get on Twitter and follow the founders of companies that do a lot of these projects that you look up to. And I think you would be well and truly on your way to trying and understanding this space better, because, you know, 6 years on, I think I'm just starting to understand bits of it, and, you know, it be ready to put in that time, because I'm sure, I mean, if you're smarter, you probably figure it out a little earlier, but it's very, very early days, and most people I know are groping in the darkness.
Yep, same. That is what I was about to say. I feel like every day I'm just groping in the darkness only. You know, I've been around for some years and I feel like I'm still learning. There is something new and exciting every day. That is what, like, you know, gets me out of bed, because there's something new to learn every day. You know, you go on Twitter and there are people talking about these exciting things that almost seem sci-fi and they have actually, you know, implemented it. And that is what is exciting about Web3 for me. That, you know, you can learn so much and you can give back. Once you do learn, then, you know, you can pull so many up along with you.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so it's wonderful. I think, yeah, as I said, we are like cult leaders following people to sort of come in and join the Web3 world, because I do truly believe that this is the future, and, you know, you're going to be doing yourself a favor if you're going to at least look at it and try to explore it, because I haven't heard of anybody who kind of looked at, you know, looked and learned a little, went down this rabbit hole and came out and were like, okay, not for me.
That's true. Once you're in, there's no going back. The rabbit hole reference is very, very true for crypto.
Yeah, you can't really go back. You know, you're in, but then that is what I want. I want people to explore it, because, you know, we get so much in our own, comfortable in our own echo chambers, I believe, that, you know, we kind of tend to think we're talking to the same people, right? People who are so passionate about Web3 and they're builders in the space. And we kind of forget that there is a large populace who is not even, you know, looking this way. Apart from, you know, just hearing the crypto aspect of it. You know, okay, there is crypto exchanges and there is trading involved, and, you know, it can be perhaps a way to sort of create an income stream. But there is so much more to Web3 than that.
True. Yeah, you know, for me, I'm getting to meet a lot of my heroes, you know, right, from the crypto world right now, who are looking at Web3. And I make it a point to go and, like, thank them for looking at this space, because they bring a sense of traditional legitimacy to the space.
Right.
Yeah. I couldn't be happier that they are in the space. And it's happening slowly but surely.
Yeah. No, it's so amazing. Like, Santosh is working on Foundership, right? And I was so in awe of him. Like, he built Explora and everything. And I was thinking that, okay, he's going to come into Web3. And, you know, experience does, you know, matter so much. Like, even if you're coming from Web 2, Web 1, wherever you're coming from, but, you know, you're coming from experience, you've learned something. Tech is tech. It might have some iterations, but ultimately, when people are coming in and, you know, building amazing things, you can't help but be, you know, like you feel a little prouder of being in the space yourself.
That's true. That's true. And yeah. And also, you know, one thing about Web3 is that I feel like it's just because of how fast the space moves and how quickly paradigms change.
Right.
It's all optimized for very short-term thinking. And a lot of the traditional long-term roll up your sleeves and be committed to the problem for a really long time, right? That's very, very common in Web2. And a little bit of that in Web3 is not such a bad thing, you know? And that's one of the things that excites me most when I see these old players who have been there and done that in Web2, you know, the Web2 OGs, as you'd like to call them. when they enter this space, I'm like, yes, you know, like, these guys can really bring in something that, you know, Web3 is missing. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, I'm looking forward to more of that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think it's a very exciting time now that, you know, so many people are transitioning from Web2 and moving to Web3 and, or at least looking at it with some interest. I think, as you said, that kind of brings some legitimacy and some credibility to Web3 as well. And I am banking on their experience. I think that, you know, we have so many young entrepreneurs who are their early 20s, etc., who are building fabulous products and, you know, trying to scale companies. But then as, you know, scale, there are problems that come, you know, companies face when you're scaling that are very different from a company that is kind of bootstrapped. So this experience is only going to help, I think.
I agree.
Thank you so much, Raghu. This has been so lovely. Like, it was just like chatting with you on like any of our calls, but it was so insightful and so lovely. It's always great to talk to you. Any parting thoughts before we wrap this up?
Thanks for having me on board, Tarusha. And, you know, you've been around for a while. And I'm always excited when there's something new that comes out of the Oropocket and Uniform family. And I'm looking forward to what's in store with what you guys are launching in the near future. So, you know, that's probably my only parting thought. You know, guys, follow Tarusha, follow Mohit, and check out the cool stuff that they're doing.
You're just too kind. You're very kind. But thank you so much for always being there and, you know, letting us went to you and brainstorm with you. We are very, very grateful. I'm incredibly grateful that, you know, our paths crossed. And I think I'll always hold you in a lot of gratitude. So thank you for taking out the time. I know you have a sick, busy schedule. And thank you for speaking to me today.
Thanks for having me, Tarusha. I really enjoyed it.